From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Omarosa Manigault Newman was a star in President Trump's TV series, The Apprentice, and in the series, he fired her more than once. Omarosa joined the White House staff in January of 2017 as Director of Communications for the Office of Public Liaison, and she was fired from that job 1 year later. Her new memoir, titled Unhinged, comes out tomorrow. She's been releasing excerpts and granting advance interviews, including an intense 10 minutes with Savannah Guthrie this morning on the Today Show. Here is some of the exchange that happened with Savannah when Omarosa wanted to end the interview.
The book is called Unhinged.
You know that we have an interview right after this.
Yes.
And I know that you want to go more with more time. But I will answer your last question, and you see that the time is
Yeah, what time do you need to go?
No, you know that it's a seven-minute interview. Now we're at 10.
Are we? I don't know. I actually don't know the time. But if you want to answer it, if you've got to go,
I'm going to say this to you.
All right, that was just one of the awkward, uncomfortable exchanges. There are many questions about what Omarosa is talking about and what she's written about in the book, including the overall question, how important is this book? So let's check in with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken.
Beth.
Yeah.
Beth, what is happening to us?
I mean,
this is insane. This is a reality TV presidency, and now we're talking about a reality. I mean, she's the disgruntled guest from The Apprentice who everybody wants to know what she's thinking and how she's reacting. And then they're asking Kellyanne Conway, who has probably never told the truth a day in her life, goes on TV and says, what do you think about Omarosa? She'll say, well, she's a liar. I mean, it's just surreal. It's more reality TV.
I really weighed whether to begin this conversation with this, but I decided to do so for a couple reasons. People everywhere are going to hear about her because she did so many interviews and the book comes out tomorrow. She did manage to somehow make a secret recording in the Situation Room where she was fired. That alone begs a little bit of discussion.
Absolutely.
And then she talks about the fact that there are three different tapes or multiple tapes of the president using the N-word during production of The Apprentice. So, yeah, we shouldn't be spending time on this, but oh well, here we are.
No, but you know something, you do make a very important point. The fact is, she recorded a conversation in the Situation Room with John Kelly, the chief of staff, as he's firing her. The thought of recording a conversation in this super secret room, and there's no protection against people recording conversations, but I think it lets you know what life is like in the White House. The fact that Michael Cohen is taping the president and Omarosa is taping John Kelly, if not the president as well. It seems like everybody is either paranoid or just not trusting anyone, and that's what life seems to be. And you know, I didn't see this morning's interview, but I did watch her interviewed by Chuck Todd. And for somebody who just was such a Trump booster for so long, and now suddenly is since she was fired, to be such a Trump critic, it's just head spinning.
Savannah Guthrie asked Omarosa how she managed to tape this conversation with General Kelly or with the president. And she said, I'll leave that to your imagination. And Savannah said, why be coy? She said, I'm not being coy. But she said that she has protections, that she's not worried about legal consequences because she is a whistleblower. That was her phrase. Here's Omarosa talking about General Kelly.
And the moment I said, I would like to leave, and they said, I can't go, it became false imprisonment. Calm down. And the other part of this is, I'm going to tell you that there are other people who have been treated this way by General Kelly. There's a lot of very corrupt things that are happening in the White House, and I am going to blow the whistle on a lot of this.
Are you concerned at all about any legal consequences for taping
they
in a situation room?
But they
are
should
you?
Be concerned.
Are
no,
you?
Absolutely not, because I have protections. The moment that I've decided to blow the whistle on a lot of the corruption going on in the White House, there are protections that are afforded to me.
So, Ken, she alleges that she was taken into the Situation Room and kept there for 4 hours and that there were four men with her alone talking to her. So she does have something to say about that situation. In this interview, she repeatedly tells Savannah to calm down. I think that it's worth watching and listening to as you decide for yourself whether to listen to this person. And again, I come back to that original question, Ken. Is this book important? Is it a piece of the quilt that's going to be assembled about this presidency?
Well, I think the answer to that is definitely yes. I mean, we saw that with the Fire and Fury book. Fire and Fear, whatever the Michael Wolff book was. I mean, it was only a blip at the time. It didn't last that long, but it did show a lot of the internal workings or unworkings in the White House. But it also comes on a weekend where we hear to see the announcement that Michael Avenatti, the Stormy Daniels attorney, is now talking about running for president.
How about that?
I mean, why not? Maybe, and have Omarosa as a running mate. I mean, there are very few people in the world who only are all known only by their first name, like Omarosa and Cher and Beth. I mean, you know, these are giants in the... I'm sorry about that.
Let's just go past that. But Michael Avenatti was in Iowa, and he said he wanted to, quote, listen to people and learn about some issues that are facing the citizens of Iowa and do my homework. Well, that's probably wise advice in many arenas of anyone's life, right?
Well, yes. And then, you know, something, I mean, what does Michael Avenatti know about running for president? What is Donald Trump knowing about running for president? It all seems to be personality driven. I mean, the thought of somebody like Joe Biden, who was in the Senate for 450 years, running for president, I mean, that just seems, of course, it was 36 years, but it just seems so old-fashioned. Now it's just, I mean, people wanted Oprah Winfrey to run. Michael Avenatti is talking to people in Iowa, and I'm not criticizing them as much as I am just acknowledging that we have a new realm of politics that I just, for somebody who's been covering it for so long, is I'm still dumbstruck. I'm still surprised. And maybe that's the most surprising thing of all, that I'm still surprised by this stuff.
Well, I don't know how much you're going to look at a candidate and right away say, are they running for office to make money? Are they running for office for fame? Are they running for office to be able to write a book? You know, there are a lot of reasons that people get into politics now, and maybe you look at it through a different lens of a different time, Ken.
But you know something? All those questions you just asked are absolutely legitimate. We don't know if candidates are serious. We don't know if they're doing it to sell a book. We don't know if they're trying to get attention. Did anybody think when Donald Trump was musing about running for president in 2013, 2014, 2015, that he would actually run, let alone get the nomination, let alone get elected president? I certainly wasn't among them. So, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, what used to be the norm in politics, that word norm, you know, it only exists on the Cheers TV show. It doesn't exist in real life anymore.
Well, you say TV. I think some of his plan might have been the TV network or the Trump TV show. But a lot of people did listen to him and took that seriously, cheered him on, and then voted for him. So
yep.
Here we have it. Let me shift you a little bit to the ongoing story of the Manafort trial. Prosecutors say they're going to call a witness or two or three today, but they do expect to rest their case. And I know you're following the case closely. The entire case could be wrapped up pretty soon.
Maybe. I mean, you're absolutely right. The prosecution does look like it's going to close out its case, and then we still have to hear from the defense. I mean, everything I hear, look, it seems clear that everything that Paul Manafort is accused of doing occurred prior to him working for the president, for the Trump campaign, which seems to be only from March till August of 2016. I think the reason Robert Mueller has such an interest in him is that he was there. First of all, he was there during that meeting at Trump Tower when Manafort and Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner all met with that Russian woman who had ties to the Kremlin, who was offering dirt on Hillary Clinton. So Manafort may know stuff, but for all the salaciousness we're hearing about him, about his expensive suits and the fact that he was in debt and the fact that he lied to so many people and the fact that his aide, Rick Gates, stole from him and lied to him as well, and the fact that Manafort himself had extramarital affairs and the fact that he lied to banks to get bank loans and the fact that he's on trial for, you know, tax evasion and bank fraud. It doesn't feel like it has anything to do with Trump, but I guess Maybe Mueller's trying to put the screws on Manafort to basically say, well, look, if you come clean on this stuff, we'll give you a break if you tell us what you know about Mueller. So the Trump people are saying that it's a witch hunt, that there's nothing there. But I suspect that everything I've seen about Manafort shows that there is a there. I don't know what the connection is with Trump, but it seems like Manafort is not going to wind up in a good position should this go to a jury.
I should go back and count how many times you just said the word lying, because I hate to think that lying is more of a participation sport in this country than it ever has been. But in terms of politics, we know it's always been present. I just don't know to what degree it's different in this administration.
I think that's true. And, you know, sometimes I get impatient, and maybe it's more about me. Sometimes I'll look at newspaper headlines and I'll say, well, look at all these untruths or look at all these falsehoods. I think you need to say it like it is. And if they're not telling the truth, if you're making stuff up, which we see day in and day out in this administration, it's a lie. And sometimes, you know, that's one of the problems about the risks of the president testifying before Robert Mueller, because the president believes in so much of what he says. He may insist he's not lying, and he may believe that he's not lying, but when you look at, you know, what the facts are, it's falsehood.
Well, the irony, though, Ken, is that you listen to Trump supporters across the country, and what are they often quoted or heard saying? And it is, we love this president because he tells it like
it is.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't care because of alleged lies, because Obama lied and Hillary Clinton lied and William Henry Harrison lied. So I kind of think that. Look, Trump does have an appeal to a large segment of this country. It may not be a majority, but it's certainly a large segment of this country that they're just tired of the way things have been all along, and they're willing to forgive or overlook or ignore some of these worst bad transgressions. But there are others who say, look, if there was involvement from a foreign power to influence this country, and if, there's a big if, but if people in the Trump campaign worked with Russia to make this happen, I don't know how you turn your side and shrug your shoulders and say it's politics as usual. So you know something, ultimately Robert Mueller could have his investigation and release everything to the American public, and you still may have 40% of the American people saying, so what, or we don't care. A lot has to do with what happens on November 6th in the midterm elections and in the year 2020, but ultimately something being stated by a prosecutor saying, this is what the facts are, that may not be enough.
All right. Well, we should be talking about House Intelligence Committee Chair Devin Nunes, who, of course, is from California. But we're just going to post a couple links about that because our time is kind of short. Maybe one mention here, Ken, of primary elections, which continue across the country. And there is a recount happening in Kansas.
There's a recount in Kansas with Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State, challenging the incumbent governor there. That right now it's only a lead of 110 votes. There's likely to be a recounting of provisional votes in that special election in Ohio between Danny O'Connor, the Democrat, and Troy Balderson, the Republican, in a seat that has always gone Republican. So these are two very close contests. And if nothing else, and it gives you the old, it returns you to the old adage, every vote counts, and you've just got to vote because every single vote makes a difference.
All right, Ken, thanks so much. We will not be talking to you next week, but we'll catch you the week after, okay?
Yes, but please post on your page my home phone number, and everybody can call me at home so we can have our regular Monday chat.
Well, you know, everybody wants to talk to you, so okay, I'll be happy to. How about I post a link to your website instead?
That's probably safer.
All right, Ken. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Beth. But I'll call you later anyway. All right. That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You can find more at capradio.org/insight, including that link to his website. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, your NPR station.